better get it up. I'm gonna have to kill you. Unless you're alive, you can't play, and if you don't play...
Welcome to Jake's Old and New Movie Review, the movie review show where we talk about movies of all types, old and new. And I am here with my awesome guest, Zach. Thanks for being here, Zach.
Hello, Rodney Dangerfield. It's nice to see you, man.
Rodney Dangerfield, where'd that come from?
I don't know. You kind of remind me of him in a way.
Oh, that's okay. We at my work, we quote him all the time. So
he's a very quotable figure.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's like, oh, man, I wasn't given any toys as a kid. Good thing I was born a boy because I was born with one.
I've never heard that one, actually.
I didn't either until my coworkers. It was like, my sex life's so bad, I tried masturbating, I got a headache.
Isn't masturbation supposed to relieve headaches? I think.
I know, that's, it's so funny. It's hilarious.
Well, to the uninitiated, a little bit of context. This is actually Jacob and myself. This is our first conversation we've really actually... truly had. I mean, we've talked once before.
We have a very close mutual friend, Sam, who was on a previous episode of the podcast.
Yeah, very close. He's kind of like my other half, that man is.
Oh, yeah, I could tell.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to live with him. Hard to live without him.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Oh, man. Do you think about visiting, maybe?
Man, I think about visiting all the time. I do have to get my passport first and foremost, which is something that I've been trying to do for years now. And it's not that fucking hard. It's not that hard. But I just keep getting – I keep moving or getting sidetracked or things end up happening. So.
Oh, man. Well, if you ever make a visit down here, it'd be awesome to, like, meet you in person.
Hell yes, dude. The first thing I'm going to do when I get down there is I'm going to slap your belly. I'm gonna
kiss
it. I'm gonna rub it. I'm gonna love it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Be prepared.
Oh boy.
Mm-hmm. And this is gonna be a wild one, isn't it?
Oh, a bit. We gotta talk about a wild movie for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what is that we're talking about? I think we're talking about Grey's Anatomy, aren't we?
Oh, I mean, if my friend Siri was on this podcast, she'd absolutely want to, and I'd be like, absolutely fucking not. But I would choose something way better, including the movie we're about to talk about, which is the 1982 science fiction classic, the one and only Blade Runner.
Blade Runner.
Don't.
Say again. I'm sorry.
Oh, what'd you say? Sorry.
No, you're just cutting out a bit, but I got you. I got you here.
Okay.
So can I start you off with a question?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So when was the first time you were introduced to this movie?
It's always kind of been like one of those science fiction movies that I've always kind of been in the foreground. Like you always hear, it's like one of those movies you always hear about, but I didn't see it till I was 17. That was the first time I watched Blade Runner. But I always heard like it was one of those science fiction classics that is just so iconic. It's like just one of those movies. So, and then I finally watched it. I don't know why I did. I was always just curious. And I actually, like, the first time I watched it, I didn't really get it, or I was like not like into it as much as I thought I would be. Blade Runner, like, to sum it up, it's one of those movies that takes repeated viewings to really get it, because now I love Blade Runner to death, but it's taking me a lot, like, to watch it a couple times to really appreciate it for how good it is. Because the first time I watched it, I really didn't know what it was going to be, and then I really didn't even know about Philip K. Dick at all. It was a real slow burn. I didn't realize it was more of a neo-noir detective story, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then when you watch it, I feel a couple other times you kind of feel more, you get used to it, and then it's just grown on me a lot, where I really like both this movie and the sequel, 2049. What was your first experience, exposure to Blade Runner?
Yeah, my first, so I didn't know about Blade Runner basically my entire life. And I had always, like, it was kind of like what you said, it was kind of there. I had always actually mixed up Blade Runner with the movie Blade. I thought they were the same thing. And I think that's actually...
Wesley Snipes is the vampire.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's actually a pretty common mistake, because I was actually talking to my stepmom earlier today that was going on a podcast. And I was like, yeah, we're doing it about Blade Runner. And she's like, oh, it's the one with, you know, Wesley Snipes in it. I'm like, no. I thought the same thing for a long time.
I think it's like the confusion. It's easy. And then, like, the original novel is called
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Yeah, so it's like,
yeah. So
is apparently not even mentioned in the book.
No. I mean, like,
did not even read the book when he made the movie.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. And I'm actually kind of thankful for that. So originally with Blade Runner, I actually had never seen the movie until about 4 months ago. And my roommate Dolly Delino, he introduced me to the movie, and he's a diehard Blade Runner fan. So I had actually seen Blade Runner 2049 before Blade Runner, and I really enjoyed that movie just standalone. I thought it was really good. And I, before that, had been really into Philip K. Dick anyways. I was reading Clans of the Alphane Moon by him, and then I read Ubik, and then I watched Blade Runner 2049, and I knew what Blade Runner was. And so I picked up the book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, and I've read it. And it is actually one of my favorite Philip K. Dick's books. And so when I first watched it about 4 months ago, my roommate Delino was like, he was kind of watch it with, like, you know, when you can watch a movie by yourself, or you can watch it with someone who knows the movie really well, and it changes the mood of the movie when they give a bit of commentary with it almost, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was fucking blown away, dude. Like, it really like, from not seeing it at all to, like, reading the book and then watching it really escalated the movie up to, like, one of my favorite movies of all time. Yeah, man, I was so blown away by the movie. And that was about 4 months ago, and I have seen the movie probably like 500 fucking times since then, man. Like, I'll put it on. I've seen it on, like, I've watched it sober. I've watched it drunk. I've watched it on a plethora of other drugs. I've watched it in the background, like, every kind of way you can watch a movie, I've almost seen it. So I've
watched it, like, stoned out of my mind. I'm one of those people, I love detective stories. So when I'm stoned, I just really love detective stories. So I just
yeah.
And you were blown away by the movie. I mean, just how amazing this film looks. Is, like,
oh my god.
Off the chain. And the fact that this movie came out in 1982, I still can't believe it. Like,
well, that's like the big, like, Delino, before I watched the movie, he gave me the disclaimer. He was like, nothing in this movie is, there's, like, you know, there's special effects, but no, like, CGI or nothing like that. It's all miniatures and like
it's all models and like,
yeah, it's all,
and it's just crazy how good it looks. Like, and like, it takes exactly. So to actually, like, have to build stuff. Because with CG, you can just have it in a computer, but actually, like, do all this.
The practical effects in the movie are just absolutely insane. And I think everything that goes, every element of the movie really, like, ties everything together, like, with the soundtrack and everything. And when I first watched it, I gave it, like, my full attention. And honestly, every time I watched it since, I watched it last night to prepare for the podcast a bit, and I gave it my full attention, and then I watched it a little bit this morning too, and I fell asleep actually, because it's a very, very hypnotic movie. It's a very easy movie to fall asleep to.
It's not a long movie either. It's like right under 2 hours. Like, I don't know why I watched it, but it's a good, like 2049 is longer by like 2 minutes.
Is 2049 longer? You know what though? Blade Runner seems longer than 2049 though, just because it is, you know, it does have such a slow pace behind it. So
it's fair, yeah. 2049 has a bit more of similar pacing, but I feel like there's more progression in the sense that, like, the case that Harrison Ford is solving in the first Blade Runner is kind of a small case. Like, it's the four replicants, and then it kind of leads to then there's Rachel on the side. With 2049, he kind of has to go outside how we can explore more.
Yeah, and I feel like with 2049, it seemed like you said, with the progression, like the whole movie, like in the original Blade Runner, it's kind of one of those movies that you go scene for scene with. Like, it's one of those movies that it's not really like a, I mean, it does feel like a full encapsulated. I feel like with 2049, like it's so much more of a, like, because 2049 does have kind of a better plot than the original Blade Runner, in the story sense. Like, when I watch the original Blade Runner, I kind of wait for scenes to come up. You know, it's more of a scene for scene movie almost, in a sense.
Oh, absolutely.
And
there's like certain highlights that are incredible, and then like you have like the other stuff that kind of doesn't stand out as well, but then it makes like the other scenes that come in like more powerful, I feel.
Yeah, definitely. I had heard that this is actually Ridley Scott's favorite movie that he had made, which is,
yeah, he said that it was his like most personal film. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So funny because Ridley Scott and Harrison Ford did not get along with each other.
Yeah, I heard about that. I heard that a lot of the actors in the movie actually did not like Ridley Scott after the film was made. And
interesting. Well, there's the big debate with Deckard, which we'll talk about later on, but that's kind of like the reason why Ridley Scott and Harrison Ford differ on the movie. But I'm to go through the movie kind of just in general, like the fact that just like when it starts, like you see like the first scene with like they're doing the Voight Kampff test with the one replicant.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of is really cold and trying to put you in that kind of scenery, I feel.
I think that first scene is absolutely like monumental, man. And it really just, all the actors in the movie, I think, especially, you know, Harrison Ford does a good job, I think, but I think the real highlight of this movie, with acting wise, are actually just like the supporting actors, like
Rucker Hauer for sure.
Yeah, they really, really like, I think get the sense of like even the book, like the beginning scene with that beginning soundtrack. If there's anything in the movie that really does, I think, fit with the book properly, it is the soundtrack, because the soundtrack sounds
fantastic.
The soundtrack really, and the way it opens, it really like, it seems like it's bigger than what it's like. It's bigger. It's something bigger than itself. You know what I mean? And the book has that mysterious vibe to it. You know what I mean? And I think the soundtrack really takes it away quite a bit. And I just really love the way the beginning scene is. It's like hazy, and it just sets the mood so fucking perfectly, you know?
Oh, I agree. And just the fact that like the detective's just heavily smoking cigarettes, I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
And then scene later on where Harrison Ford goes to his old boss and they're just smoking cigarettes.
So, you know, it's so funny you bring that up, because I watched the movie last night. I took notes, and one of the big notes I have, I'm a smoker, and as a smoker, there are movies that make you want to get the fuck off your chair and go have a cigarette, and this is one of those movies.
Oh, absolutely. Another one I noticed is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Oh my God, they smoke so much cigarettes. Dude, in that movie.
It's hard as a smoker to watch movies in a theater, and when you see people smoking so elegantly and so romantically, like, it's very difficult to not go have it. So, unfortunately, Jacob and I are receiving a little bit of trouble. So, if it is cut out a little bit, I apologize. But we were talking about the smoking in the movie. And for me, that's actually a big part of the movie. And what I was just getting on before, all the cigarettes in the movie are fucking huge, man. Like, they're ginormous. They look like blunts. And they look so enticing, almost. Like, I want to smoke what they're smoking, you know?
Like, just a nice fat cigarette.
Yeah, and they're also smoky, and I think it really enhances a bit of the scenery too, because it's a very like hazed out kind of movie. So,
oh, I agree. It's very I love how like synthetic it feels, like.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's just this world it creates, and like, I mean, the fact that it's 2019 and this movie takes place in 2019 is you know, how much But you don't care.
There should have been vapes, man. Like they really took it off because guys don't smoke anymore, man. You know,
mostly vapes.
It's all if they were just smoking vapes. See the. That's actually, you said something about world building. There is like what they say is that Ridley Scott didn't actually read the book before. And I'm really happy about that, actually. I think that's the best way because if there's one thing I think most movies are, when a movie is directly based off a book, you're basically bound to get hate because you can't directly, bring a book into a movie. I mean, you can try, and I'm sure there's movies that have tried scene for scene with books and stuff. Like, I think The Lord of the Rings does it pretty well, actually.
Yeah, but, I think that's probably the best example. But even Lord of the Rings has Tolkien purists that say he kind of went off. Kind of still went off, which I don't mind because with books, you have to change some stuff because a lot of books just aren't filmable unless
exactly. And it's actually, that's kind of like the first season of Game of Thrones is almost directly like book for book with the first book as well. And then the second season takes off and they did a really good job in the first season, but that first season's like 9 hours, like if they were to make that into a movie, obviously just the first book, it wouldn't work out. And that's why what I love about this movie, it does not say it's an adaption. It just says it's inspired by. And I think if a lot of movies that were based off of books just decided to go with that catchphrase, just inspired by.
That would work better in his favor.
Exactly. And you know what? Like, there's things in Blade Runner that, like, the book is great for many reasons, but Blade Runner really does the world building behind it. Like just the small things, like I read the book before I watched the movie and like what I had in my head while I was reading the book is completely different than what the movie was like. And the book reads almost more like a Mad Max type of apocalypse thing, it's got more of it focuses more on like the dust and like the graininess of it, I feel, at least. And and so for Ridley Scott to not have read the book, I don't know where did the inspiration come from then? The writers? Like who?
Well, yeah. The writers were Hampton Fletcher, the main guy that wrote the screenplay. And basically, kind of how it happened was he wanted to develop it. And I think Ridley Scott, Hampton Fletcher basically kind of produced the screenplay from it, and it kind of fell into Ridley Scott's hands, like because he did Alien, so he was a really like big science fiction director at the time.
Big. I'm happy that the screenplay was given like such a big budget too, and such a big like, because coming right off of Alien and this was between Aliens and Alien, right?
Yeah. Well, Aliens isn't by Ridley Scott.
Aliens is it not?
It's by James Cameron, actually.
Oh, Alien,
Ridley Scott. But then Ridley Scott went back to Alien he did Prometheus.
Oh wow! You know what, man? I've actually never seen either of the Alien movies, honestly.
I've seen Alien One. I've seen Alien, Aliens, and then Prometheus and Alien Covenant. I have not seen like Alien 3 or Alien Resurrection.
Interesting. I did see Prometheus, but I didn't realize it was set in the same world or
universe. Well, it's very it's not really hinted at in the movie that often.
It's just like small detail.
Scene at the end. And it's like a post-credit scene. Other than that, it's kind of its own thing, Prometheus.
Oh, okay. That was a good movie, actually. I did enjoy that. But but I am happy that Blade Runner was given like such a big budget that it was, because I think Philip K. Dick's stories, and hey, speaking of screenplays, apparently, and I read this I think last week, Philip K. Dick actually wrote a Blade Runner or a Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep screenplay.
Oh, really?
So yeah, I think that was like close to when he wrote the book. I could be wrong on that, but so he, I like that. I think with a lot of Philip K. Dick books, he writes them with the intention of them like having a movie eventually. Yeah, is that what he did with that? What was his name?
Well, basically, like before Jurassic Park even came out, it got film deals. And then when the movie came out, The Lost World, they asked him to write another book so he can make a movie about it.
So he wrote it for the purpose of a, that's why they got shittier and shittier.
Yeah, that makes sense. Exactly.
Yeah. I actually grew up with Jurassic Park 3 though, so that is still one of my, but I prefer to. Like, yeah.
Jurassic Park 3 is very entertaining. Lost World is really boring.
Yeah, you know, I haven't watched it since I was a young lad, so
I've seen the first Jurassic Park like fucking couldn't even count, but Lost World I've only seen like a couple of times.
I
can't even count how many times I've seen the first one.
Yeah, I've only watched the first one I think like a handful of times, and when I was really young,
it was a movie me and my grandpa bonded over a lot.
Nice. That VHS tape is just
classic black VHS tape with the logo.
Nice. Yeah. I lost my track here for a sec.
Oh, you said the screenplay big budget.
Oh yeah. So because there's other Philip K. Dick books that have been put into movies such as like Total Recall and stuff, which it also is a big budget movie.
Probably a lower budget. The Total Recall, and you said Minority Report.
That's right. Which was Ubik. No, wait, my Minority Report was the one with fucking Brad Pitt, Liam.
Tom Cruise, yeah.
Was it Tom Cruise? Oh, okay. That was the one that was in like 2006, right?
And 2002.
Okay, I'm thinking of a different one.
They tried to make a movie about it like 4 different times, and it just didn't. They never were able to get it out of production.
Yeah, that's right. But there is a Ubik video game, though.
I'm on the Wikipedia page now, so.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, there's a Ubik video game that. When you look it up on YouTube, it doesn't have a lot of views or anything on the videos. Like a lot of people don't know about it. I think it was a PC game. Oh. It came out like '98, and it's a very like strategic, long-winded kind of game. No like action or gameplay really. But with Blade Runner here, we were talking about in the beginning. We're talking about the beginning scene with like the Void Comtesse and everything. So like one question I've had. If there's one thing they get right completely from the book, it's the Voight Comtesse. Like that is pretty much.
Ask the questions.
Yeah, the questions based on empathy. Like they actually do take, I think, a couple of the questions from the book. The screenplay takes it directly to the movie, and like with the lighting and the, because he says like he's always like it's too bright in here and whatnot. That. Yeah, and the pupil dilation and stuff. So I was like kind of wondering. Like, because the questions are based in empathy, right? Like a lot to do with like with animals and like what would you do in the situation if you see an animal or maybe a human or something like that in a certain deadly situation? Would psychopaths fail that test? Like people without empathy, you know, like.
It was like when he talks about like they aren't given emotion. And they start to develop their own emotional responses, and I think that to me that kind of felt like in that sense, like a psychopath, they'd fail, but then they start to like develop their own type of emotional way of thinking.
Interesting. Okay, so that makes sense because Tyrell, when Deckard gives Rachel the Voight Comtesse,
he's asked like 100 questions.
Yeah, and Tyrell is like he's in. Tyrell is impressed by that. He's like, you had to, it usually takes 30. He's like, you had to do 100 questions. Like he's almost like, you can see what he's doing. And what I got last night actually for the first time was that he's putting like memories and into the heads of the replicants so that they don't know the replicants, and then in turn they don't know they have the expiration date and they don't lash out.
Okay.
Like, I think he's, like, putting the memories into the replicants so they feel like they're human the entire time. They just never, ever guess it.
In the movie, he said it was his niece's memory. Rachel.
That's right. And so I feel like because because, like, I mean, he's giving sentience to these robots. So Tyrell is, like, playing God.
That's why, like when the four when the rogue replicants go to him later in the movie, it kind of has, it's like they call him father. Like that type of thing.
Yeah, 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 totally. And dude, there's like three scenes in this movie, I think, particularly that if you're watching with full attention, these scenes like are jarring. And two of them happen at the same scene. Is the first one's when he kisses Tyrell. And I was just like, so.
Because
he kisses him before he obviously, you know, gouges his fucking eyes out, which is one of the other scenes.
That's like the only like super violent like scene in the movie, but it's pretty like he gouges his eyes out.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what's weird? That like people say that's one of the most violent scenes and that like nothing really like that happens. And I guess that's kind of true. But like with the glass breaking scene when she's getting shot. Like, that's pretty violent scene. It's done beautifully, but it's, like...
Yeah. I don't know why. Like, I don't know why. Because I know, like, when she, like, collapsed, I don't know why that never, like, got, like... Maybe it's because of, like, the fact that, like, she fell with the glass, but the fact, like, when Tyrell gets killed, like, the fact that he, like, puts his thumbs through his eyes, and it's, like, oh, it's just so, like, that type of thing looks bad.
Yeah.
But
it is a little bit more close. Like it is like more close. It does portray itself as a more violent scene. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And did you know that like Philip K. Dick died very shortly before the movie came out? I think only like a couple months.
He did. And apparently he did get to see the opening scene and
yeah, like the first 10 or 20 minutes or so.
Yeah. And he apparently praised it is what I read. But and I that. Actually, like, because as a big Philip K. Dick fan and stuff, you know, like, obviously his death was very short and tragic before he could really see his, you know, fame or popularity. But to have that at the end tail of his life and, you know, like, that gives me, like, a lot of solace almost, you know. I think if he saw the entire movie, I think he would really enjoy the movie, honestly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He said it was his vision, like his book on the screen, which yeah. is funny because you said, like, you kind of, when you read it, you thought of like more of a Mad Max type apocalypse.
Yeah, well, especially like when you first read the book, you kind of get that sense because everything like is really run down. It's very like dismal, but just like the movie, is very dismal. They definitely got that kind of emotion. And yeah. The character that is, what's his name? JF. In the movie, it's he homes Pris and stuff. He's the toy maker.
J.F. Sebastian.
So, and I also
That's actually like a creepy scene in my opinion. Just his toys.
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh, I have so much to talk about. That scene.
More like when he goes to sleep, he like keeps him like locked up in a cage. That always freaks me out.
Does he do that? Really?
Yeah, like he has like a mouth guard on them when he goes to sleep, or something. Wow. It's like, oh damn, that's dark.
Yeah, wow. I didn't even think about that.
But he makes them. I mean, in a way, he is kind of like Tyrell in that he's making me think.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think they have like the same kind of emotional sentience that like the androids do, though? That's weird because they're like.
They never mention.
Yeah,
but it's still weird. Like, I don't know.
When those first scenes with what's his name, JF Sebastian.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he finds Pris.
Yeah. The guy. As soon as those scenes start happening with Pris and him, the first time I watched it, I remember thinking, I'm like, what the fuck? I wonder what David Lynch thought about these scenes because, like, it starts feeling like a David Lynch movie at that point.
I just watched Mulholland Drive recently and I really.
Wait, what did you watch? Sorry.
Mulholland
Drive. I haven't seen that one.
Oh, you're in for a fucking treat.
Yeah, I've watched Eraserhead. I've watched Blue Velvet. Is that the
name? Those are the two I've seen too.
Yeah, and then
I've seen three. I've seen Eraserhead, Blue Velvet, and Mulholland Drive.
Oh, okay, and I did watch a little bit of Twin Peaks too, but I saw that.
I've seen a little bit of Twin Peaks too. I've seen like the pilot and then a couple episodes, but I like to dive deep into it more. Now that the third season, the new season that came out a couple years ago.
Yeah. I remember when that came out. That was like, because I, my friend Avery, she showed me the first season, but I only got like halfway through and I really liked it, but it's not a show I can just like watch alone, honestly, for some reason. I have to like, I don't know. So I don't really get into it, but with the third season coming out, and I've seen, like, I hear it gets fucking crazy, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Well, David Lynch.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that short that he does with the bunny rabbits?
I've never watched the entire thing, but I've like seen it on YouTube and I'm like, that's creepy.
Yeah, dude. I watched like 10 minutes of it and they can't really like watch the movie. I don't, it's a hard movie to watch. You know what I mean? Like,
it's like full length.
Yeah, it's really long. Yeah, and
it's like 90 minutes, like an actual movie, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't know if I can.
Yeah, because it's all like spoken in like dialogue, like it's all out of place, like every sentence is like somewhere else, and it's not even like English. Like,
really,
are they speaking English in it? I can't remember. It's a really weird movie that, or short, or I don't even know what it is.
I gotta look at it. Yeah, it's like rabbits.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, that's, I mean, with, I was, like, thinking during those scenes, I'm like, I feel like David Lynch would have, like, I would have loved to see this movie in 82 right next to David Lynch and, like, just get his opinion on it after. Like, you know?
Oh, my God. You've probably been, would have been like, when you go into Sebastian's house, how freaky it is. It's just not settling to be, and, like, Prince is kind of just going with it because she's on the run and she kind of has to take shelter where she can.
Yeah. And okay, so Pris is a really interesting character in this movie because her role in the movie and in the book are very different. And yeah, but it's I really like the way it's done. And actually something in the movie that's not in the book that I just, while watching it last night, realized Pris is like a pleasure model, I guess. So she's a
replicant,
yeah, for like the soldiers or something on Mars, and I thought that was really interesting. I didn't, it kind of brings more depth into her character, like, because her character has like in the book and in the movie they're both like two different people that I think play a good same kind of role, because in the book she does go to JF Sebastian's house and his name's not that in the book either, but and the reason why, actually, before I got a Mad Max feel from it, is because like he lives in an abandoned apartment building it's in the suburbs in the book, and it's abandoned and there's like dust everywhere and all this kibble, they call it, which is garbage, and they're like there alone. Whereas in the movie, it felt like there's a lot of presence in his house, so I think that with like Pris and the way that in the book she's actually like a copy of Rachel, she's the same model as Rachel. So she has the same eyes and stuff, and in the movie it looks like she's wearing a wig. She is wearing a wig, I'm pretty sure, but like it's very noticeable. Yeah,
like the scene where she falls in the glass, you could tell it's a stunt double.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they do some editing with that in one of the cuts?
The other one, what's her name? Zora.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and she's handled so differently too. But with Pris, like in the book, she has the same eyes as Rachel and the same face, but her hair is different also. So it was kind of like a weird thing that they kept, because like her hair does look like she's wearing a wig in the movie. You know, in the book, like maybe she would be, and Deckard actually has a really tough time killing her in the book, and it's kind of like whatever. But I love her fucking acrobatic skills too. She's quite the.
Like, I think that was all her too.
Really, I never understood the way like she puts her legs on Deckard, and
like on top, and then she like hits him on his head.
Yeah, that is one of the weirdest like action scenes, and it's not really good, honestly. But like,
that last scene is I say like what makes it work is it's like not really the action. It's just a great example of like a cat and mouse between Deckard and Roy Batty. Like, it's just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I the way like she twists her legs and like his head is like it goes like an owl, like it turns around. And then it cuts, and he, like, turns his body around. Like, I was – when I saw that scene the first time in the movie, I thought he was an android, too, because I was like, how can his head twist like that? And then it, like, changes, and it jolts, and it's a really weird scene. It, like – I don't know.
It was definitely surreal. Like, the movie has a lot of surreal aspects. Like, it's kind of like a dreamlike atmosphere almost.
Very dreamy. Very, very dreamy.
It reminds me of, like – not like they're related, but like Eyes Wide Shut by Stanley Kubrick. That movie's also very dreamy type of.
Well, what's funny too is like a lot of the, and I was going to say this earlier, but like a lot of the actors like hated Ridley Scott after this movie. And that's like a cliche like Kubrick thing that he's like a tough fucking guy to work with, you know?
Oh, and, yeah.
I think good movies come out of people who are tough to work with.
Like, yeah, a lot of them. I mean, I don't know if Ridley Scott's gotten better. And I actually have a quote by Ridley Scott that I have to say before we stop about the whole controversy about Deckard. And it's hilarious. And I'll have to read it before we go. I guess, what do you think of just Harrison Ford as Deckard in the movie, as Rick Deckard?
So my history with Harrison Ford is like, and this is kind of, I know, like a little blasphemous, but I was never a Star Wars kid, like growing up or anything like that. I didn't really watch the movies when I was younger. And when I was a teenager, I like watched the very first one, the one that came out originally. So episode 4, I think. And that's pretty much all I've seen. And that was my only...
not even Indiana Jones?
No, wait. Does he play Indy? Who does he play?
He plays Indiana Jones.
Okay, well, I've actually also, that is another one. I never really grew up with those films. I did watch The Crystal Skull in theaters with my dad.
I saw Crystal Skull in theaters too.
Yeah. But other than that, no. So I never really, this is kind of the first movie, like, other than the Star Wars. And I never really thought of him as much. Like, I knew he was a big actor and stuff. And when I first saw his performance, I actually wasn't really into it. But now that I've seen it a bunch of times, I think he does a good job, honestly. I kind of like his.
He's very dry and restrained. With Harrison Ford, like other characters he plays aren't like that. Like, he's very one of those detectives that is kind of hard boiled.
Yeah, and you know what? I do enjoy that. Like the image that I had of Deckard was like a stern person. Like, but like he's very closed off in this movie. Deckard is, and I think it fits the themes well, though. I really do. I think it's like, I don't know. I've grown to love his acting in this movie.
Yeah. And if you want to hear something interesting, Harrison Ford and Sean Young, who plays Rachel, apparently did not get along with each other during filming either.
Really?
Yeah, that's why the chemistry's been criticized in the movie.
So, oh, okay. Well, actually, kind of. That's what I like about their chemistry, because like that's
exactly. I think that works as an asset. I feel like. It's almost there. It's almost connecting, but at the very last moment, it pulls back. And I think that's exactly what you can feel Deckard kind of falling for her, and then he pulls himself back, and he realizes this is like a good idea. And I think that was a good way to present.
Yeah, I think so too. And like the weird chemistry that they have in the beginning, like. How they're pulled back and stuff. Like when I'm watching Rachel and act and the first guy in the first scene, Kowalski, I think his name is. When I watch them act and Roy Batty, they and with the love and stuff, like they're androids. Like everyone in this movie sounds kind of robotic, you know. But like, it, like the lack of chemistry almost adds to it, because she doesn't really like, she's an android. You know, she doesn't know how to like love and shit, right? Like, it's kind of stern and awkward. And I think it all really kind of like puts, I don't know, it kind of makes it a good chemistry by having bad chemistry. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah, a movie that kind of nailed that down recently was The Lighthouse with Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe?
Oh, yeah.
The man with the face.
Underrated. He deserves way more recognition.
I don't think I can remember a movie that I've seen him in, but he's like the most recognizable guy in the fucking world.
Oh, yeah. he's most known as the Green Goblin.
That's right. Dude, I didn't even fucking Franco was in that movie. But he's in that movie, right?
It's crazy how far he came from
Freaks and Geeks.
Spider-Man, and then he like did the whole Seth Rogen thing and like with the Disaster Artist and Pineapple Express.
I think it's really cool. I don't know if my opinion on James Franco is mixed. I get him, but I'm just like, I don't know.
I think he can do good with the right material. I don't think he's great enough on his own.
Who's the director who did Sam McKay? Not Sam McKay. The guy who did that party movie that James Franco did in Miami or something like that.
Spring Breakers. I actually don't know who did that, but I know that movie.
Spring Breakers, yeah. The same guy who did that did, he wrote Kids in the 90s. And, like, he had a couple. Yeah, yeah. I can't remember his name. Yeah. He's kind of a crazy dude, man. Like, you can watch him. He was really young when he wrote Kids. And then he wrote, what's the other one? He directed Gumbo, I think it's called. I can't fucking remember. But, crazy dude. So I was.
His name's
Harmony Korine.
I didn't know he wrote Kids. That's crazy.
Yeah, dude, that guy.
I just did The Beach Bum.
Yeah, that with, Matthew McConaughey, that's right. I haven't seen Spring Breakers or that one, so.
No, I haven't seen it. I've heard good things about Spring Breakers because he's crazy.
James Franco's crazy in that movie. Have you only seen the final cut? Like, have you seen the version of the movie with narration?
Okay, so that's where I'm kind of confused. So when I first watched the movie with Dolly, we have the Blu-ray edition. I don't know what edition it is. I probably should have looked at that, but
if it depends on which part, if it was the one with the narration or not.
No, there's no narration in the movie.
Yeah, it's the final cut. Like, Ridley Scott's, like, final edit.
Okay, so there's something about that I've been hearing about Edward's James Olmos's character, because his character is absent in the book. He's just a complete, he's just in the movie. And with the unicorn and stuff, and Dolly was telling me, he's like, well, he's placing all these unicorn figurines and stuff around, and like the beginning one isn't even a unicorn, it's like a stick man, and
it's different figures. I think he only does the unicorn at the end.
Yeah, so but apparently in the cuts before that, they change something with that, don't they? I don't know if you have you seen the other cuts.
I know like the big one was they add the unicorn. And they take away Harrison Ford's narration. Those are like the two big ones.
Yeah. So what do you?
The unicorn scene is not in the original edit.
No,
I've never seen the original edit. I've just heard like, because the story about the original edit is Harrison Ford narrates the movie, and Harrison Ford was against the narration, so he read it badly in hopes they wouldn't use it, and then they did.
Yeah, that's right. I think I've heard some of that, and he's just so like monotone, like.
Yeah, he's like I've never seen that version of just like bits and pieces, and I'm like, I don't know, like maybe that could have worked if like he didn't read it so monotone, but the fact that he read it so poorly, it just did not work.
Yeah, well, like this movie is one of those movies though, like in general, where like I have to put the subtitles on every time I watch it. You know, like, it's hard to.
And a lot of people talk about it. It's like, you have to, like, really.
Yeah, the audio is crumpled. And it has that, I find, not in a lot of movies at all, newer movies, but in older movies, like, the actors are just kind of mumbly sometimes, you know?
A little bit. Like, they're kind of speeding through the lines.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's like I don't really mind that because it's kind of a little bit more like realistic dialogue in a sense. But like my life is filled with Blade Runner things.
It's like your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And it's a very, okay, so I have something that when I first watched the movie, I got from it, and I haven't seen anyone really talk about it in the way recently AVGN did the rental review of Blade Runner. I thought that was a very good, like that one too. Yeah.
Better Media one too.
Yeah, yeah, they do a lot of great stuff. And one point that I was really upset that they didn't bring up, and I honestly haven't heard anyone bring up, so the character of Roy Batty, obviously, one of the best, I think, he's not really a villain. But
he's probably my favorite character in the movie, Roy Batty.
I think so.
So good at playing him.
Yeah, he is, I think, my favorite character in the movie. And he's also my favorite character adaption from the book to the movie. Roy Batty isn't, like, he's got a big part in it, but he looks so different. He's a Puerto Rican guy, I think. And, like, yeah, and he looks completely different. And he doesn't really, he has a wife, actually. And in the beginning of the movie, they say there's six replicants, but two of them were already retired.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's in the book. There's the six replicants immediately, and one of them is his wife, and she's not in the movie. I guess maybe she got shot in the movie, but so
she's one of the two that got shot.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably it. So with Roy, like at first, you kind of, the movie makes you want to dislike him because he seems kind of like just like, you know, he's hurting people, like the Chew, he's hurting Chew and stuff, and he just looks like a villain, and he talks like one, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's got that swagger. But he knows he's going to retire, and I think he is the only replicant other than Rachel who has full sentience. Like, I think Lebowski is still, like, an unethical, apathetic kind of like android, where I think Roy Batty actually understands apathy. And like, I think if you were to give him the Voight Kampff test, I think he would have a harder time failing it, because okay. Because what he keeps saying in the movie is he keeps talking about what he's seen. He's like, if you've seen these with my eyes and shit like that, like he says that, he brings it up a lot. And at the end of the movie, where Deckard's basically gonna drop down and he's gonna fucking die, you know, the ending scene. And Roy is about to just like hit his expiry date, and he saves Deckard instead. I think what Roy Batty has seen gave him sentience, and he wanted to give that to a human, because I think he had no intention the entire time to kill Deckard at all. I think he wanted to show Deckard that androids are capable of having empathy, and that's why he saved him at the end of the movie. And I think what's cool is that I think Blade Runner 2049 actually takes that a little bit, because there is that, like, they have that, I don't really remember the movie all that well, honestly, but they have that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since the theater, so I'm with you there.
neither have I, but they have that gang of androids who are like in it together, and they're like, they're not portrayed in the same way they are in the first movie. I do remember that.
Oh, like, yeah, I remember he, is that near the end when, like, Kay, like, is kept with them, or...
Yeah, they have like the, it's like the rebellion of all the, like,
yeah,
the,
yeah.
Yeah, and at the end of that movie, they make you want to, like, you're kind of rooting for them, whereas in the original Blade Runner, you're not really rooting for the androids at all, right? But
yeah, they don't really poke it. I mean, all of them, and none of them except for, like you said, Rachel and Batty kind of show those empathetic traits.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because, when I first saw the movie and I saw that, I thought that was like, that's what really made me love the movie, because it's like, it just, I don't know, because Deckard, like, he has these, because he's like the perfect candidate for that, because he does, even in the book, he starts, the big problem in the book is he starts to feel for androids, whereas before he could just kill them, but he starts to feel bad for them. Yeah, basically, I think, like, because Roy does keep saying, like, what he's seen are miracles, right? And like the idea of a replicant saving a life rather than destroying one or whatever is kind of like a miracle, and it's kind of like a lot in this movie and like the movie itself, just the way the visually it's represented, I feel like it's a real big, like you have to see it to believe it movie. Like,
oh, I agree. I mean, even like, and then his iconic monologue at the end, I've seen things people have never believed, and that like part is incredible.
Yeah, man, honestly, that is like one of my favorite closing scenes in a movie. And
and apparently like it's different than the original screenplay. Like there was like a version written, and then Rutger Hauer came in and like altered it. So like he like changed it, so like what he's saying is kind of the speech in his words.
Yeah, he like ad-libbed, right? Like he ad-libbed it.
Yeah, and he added the part where tears in rain. It's just like one of the best like movie monologues of all time.
It really is, man. And I think like, because the idea of like Rick Deckard thinking that he's like an android, and with what's the actor's name? Sorry, that plays Roy Batty.
Oh, Rutger Hauer.
Rutger Hauer. I don't know, man. I fucking love Rutger Hauer. I just got off
track. Yeah, this is like the movie. This is really the main movie I know him from. Because he's actually, I would think, a Dutch actor.
And he's passed away now, yeah. Right?
Yeah, he passed away this year, actually.
That was this year. Wow. Yeah. Hey, did you watch when Blade Runner in November?
When it was November 20th? Yeah. I did. I watched it in November. I didn't watch it on that day.
I think actually the last time we were talking, I did say this, but my roommate and I, we just put the movie on, and it just 2019. And I don't know. It was just like, and we weren't even planning on really watching it. We just kind of put it on the background, but we were like, dude, we have to. Just yeah.
I mean, kind of that all comes down to, what do you think of the whole debate as to either Deckard is a replicant or a human? Yeah, this is kind of like the closing point of the movie, but what are your thoughts on it? Then I'll tell you how I feel.
Okay. See, okay, so a big thing, and I was thinking about this before I came on the podcast, I don't want to reference the book too much, because I know that we're just talking about the movie now. I know they tie in together. But my personal thoughts on that, I like the idea that they toyed with it in the movie that he is. I like that they present that question, whether he is or not. I don't think he is.
I don't think so. He is either.
Like, yeah, I don't think he is. And maybe that's, and I like the idea that he isn't better, honestly. But I do like that he it makes you question it. You know what I mean?
I like leaving it ambiguous. I like that the movie doesn't say it, but again, I feel he is human. Like, to me, it just doesn't fit if he's a replicant the whole time. Like, just the structure of the story, like how he is. It just kind of, and again, that's why Ridley Scott and Harrison Ford viciously disagree on the movie, because Harrison Ford says Deckard is a human, and Ridley Scott says Deckard is a replicant. And apparently, they fought about it on the set of 2049. Because Harrison Ford still has a problem with it.
I didn't know that's why they had. I thought the reason they were just, I haven't really looked into it, but I thought the reason they didn't like each other was just, you know, being on set and like having people are difficult to work with and shit like that. But interesting. Yeah. The thing I do really, the thing that makes it really a good topic of conversation is that the movie never just, it's like, I'm glad Ridley Scott never just says that he's a replicant, right?
Ridley Scott's only said that like off, like on his own words.
Yeah, exactly. And that's fine if he wants to believe that. But in the movie, it allows for interpretation, which is really good. And honestly, I'd rather him not be. I don't think he is a replicant. And it, like in the book, there's only one part of the book, and it's kind of a smaller part, that it kind of brings up that question, because he ends up meeting a different bounty hunter who finds out about this other police station that he never even knew about. And they say that he doesn't exist as a bounty hunter. And for a bit, it feels like the story just flipped over, and you find out that the police station is completely filled with androids. Like, everyone in there is androids except for the bounty hunter. And And like with the empathy that he's feeling for Rachel in the book and stuff, he makes himself take a Voight comp test. And it says directly he's not an android.
Really? And yeah. I know in the movie he asks him if he's ever taken the test and he doesn't answer her.
Yeah, that's right.
One thing to him, I remember she said, have you ever retired a human by mistake? And he says, no. And then she said, that's a risk in your field. I felt like that's also kind of a tease at it. But again, like you said, it's not explicitly stated.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? One thing about them they go in a little bit of the book and the movie. So like he has to, because she says, have you ever killed a human by mistake? And that's a risk. So by law, he has to give them a Voight comp test first before he can retire them. But if they show him aggression, like if they retaliate, he by law is allowed to shoot them, right?
Wow.
So in the scene with the snake girl, Zora, whatever her name is, he goes in there and he doesn't say anything about the Voight comp test. He pretends he's a fucking, I don't know, or something about a woman. Yeah, like, he has that high voice and like, so he doesn't say anything about it. And then she attacks him, right? So it gives him legal, like he's obliged to, you know, kill her. And, but he doesn't say anything. She could have just thought he was a fucking, you know, a dude who was going to assault her. And then he just shoots her I don't know. So like that is a risk, because what if she was a human and this dude comes up to her and is like saying all this shit and she doesn't feel safe, right? And so she punches him and then Rick just shoots her and it's like, okay, my job here is done. I don't really know.
It's funny. I read this and the book mentions is like the extinction of animals, and the movie only kind of teases at that.
Mm-hmm.
Had a real snake and she's like, do you think if I could afford a real one, I'd be working here? And then, like, when he meets Rachel, he's like, is that a fake owl? And she's like, of course it is. It's expensive.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people say that, like, having an animal is, like, the one of the biggest parts of the book, and, like, owning an animal. And it is kind of, like, the driving factor he has to retire all these replicants. But I honestly felt like, I don't know, I felt like the animal thing was, even in the movie, I kind of felt like it was well portrayed, because it is more in the back line, but I think it
subtle. But you still kind of get it from what they're saying.
Yeah, I think the movie like focuses more on like the story of like the humanity that's involved in the book, rather than just like having an animal. Like there's also in the book, there's this thing that they totally leave out in the movie, which I think is they shouldn't have done. It's called the Mercer. It's called the Mercer, and basically what it is, it's this box that they have in their house, and you put your hands on the box and you dial an emotion. So if you want to feel depressed, or if you want to feel like happy, or if like it goes so specific, like I want to feel like I've accomplished a lot at work today and I deserve a day off. Like it's very specific.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. And that doesn't come up in the movie at all. And I feel like, yeah. The one thing, the beautiful thing about Philip K. Dick, dude, that I've always noticed is that when you're reading his books, and by the way, Jacob, I really hope after this, you should go read, like, you read the book, dude. They're very
short. Oh, yeah, I'll probably the reader where I get because yeah. I like to listen to the
drive. Yeah, yeah, the audio, dude, they're short, too, like, short books, or, like, audio. I think an audio book's, like, 6 hours, I think.
Oh, wow. That's pretty short for an audio book. And Game of Thrones is, like, day.
Yeah, dude, that's like an fuck, what was I gonna say? Oh, I lost it.
His book, his writing.
Oh yes. I love it because he was a very well-known user of like psychedelics and drugs. He was kind of a part of that 60s scene, kind of like a sci-fi Hunter S. Thompson, I guess, but maybe not as crazy. I felt like he just did drugs in his house alone. But when when you're reading his books, I feel like you can see the point where he's sober, like he's taken the drugs and he's sober, and then you in your reading and you see where like the drugs kick in almost. And
really cool.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy because like and with Ubik, it's honestly, when you read Ubik, it's like the entire time he's just fucking high. But in Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, like the beginning of the book feels very like it was like the come up almost. And I think the movie kind of does that too, because it does give you like a drug inducing kind of effect, I feel, almost.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, having as someone who's taken acid, it's
It's the glossy aspect of acid.
Yeah, that's like, dude, that's like such overstimulation, man. If like, I wonder like what kind of drugs they have in future LA.
Probably like not like actual acid. It'd probably be like a simulator version. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what acid is like without taking it.
You know what? You last night when I was watching Blade Runner, I kept thinking about the money or the money. The
with I haven't seen that movie. Actually,
yeah. You said you've never seen it.
Yeah, I've never seen Looper. I've always it's what I know. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and like he's the young version of Bruce Willis.
Yeah, yeah, dude. You should. That's a really good movie, actually. I saw it in theaters.
Movie's on my list, like of wanting to see eventually.
Yeah, it's such a tight little movie. Like it's one of them I can watch. I a lot of times I can't rewatch movies unless they're ones that I absolutely love. That's one movie that I actually can rewatch a lot. It does like I feel like take a bit of inspiration from like Blade Runner in the same way that a lot of sci-fi takes inspiration from that movie.
Huge influence Blade Runner has on science fiction, just in general. Yeah, anime too. Just look at Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, I tried watching that actually, but I ended up falling asleep by accident. But
I've seen Ghost in the Shell. I've just haven't seen it since I was in high school. So I gotta give it another shot. But I know Looper. It's directed by Rian Johnson, who did Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he actually had the movie Knives Out, which just came out.
Oh, interesting. I don't know. Dude, you're quite the cinephile, my friend.
I am. My friends can tell you I'm a huge movie.
Yeah, I'm going to take you to a trivia night one day, and we're going to fucking win, man.
Dude, Sam could tell you how he's gone with me to trivia nights, and he said it's been great.
I know this is Jacob's old and new movie reviews, but if you ever thought of like doing Jacob's old and new music reviews, almost like albums.
Oh, I have an idea for an album podcast,
buddy. Because I can talk music all fucking day, my friend.
Which that's going to be awesome. It'll basically just be breaking down albums one by one. But it's one I'm very excited about. But that's kind of a later development.
Yeah, definitely. Dude, we should like give each other albums to listen to and then like talk about them.
Oh man. That's cool. Me and Sam have very similar music tastes. We love the Smiths and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've actually Samson kind of brought me onto the Smiths a little bit this summer when he's up here, but I've never really given them the time, so
stuff like that.
Another thing about Blade Runner, which I last night when I watched the movie, this time I told myself I'm not going to look at like Deckard in any scene. I'm not going to like focus on what they want you to focus on. Like I'm just going to look in the background of everything. Dude, there's always something to fucking look at, and I love that about this movie. And a lot of movies, I like that about.
My quote was the phrase they say about movies is when you could pause any shot in the movie and it looks like a beautiful painting. That's very true of the movie Blade Runner.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's funny because I don't know when you edit this if they'll hear it at all or anything, but you were halfway through that and we accidentally cut out and halfway through your sentence. That's exactly what I thought because I've heard that quote before. Like it's like a very when I was going through a huge Stanley Kubrick phase, like you said, like a good movie is where every shot is like a painting, like it's like a moving painting and accidental renaissance almost in a sense.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And Stanley Kubrick was one of the best examples of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean,
he made Tom Cruise do a take in Eyes Wide Shut like over 200 times. So.
Wow, dude, I've never seen Eyes Wide Shut. I know what movie that's his last movie he made, right?
Yeah, yeah. It came out it came out like he finished it right before he died.
To think about Tom Cruise working with Kubrick, like I didn't even that's such a weird
movie. I know. You know. And it's probably my favorite Kubrick movie.
I hate that like I love almost, not almost every movie. I haven't seen almost every movie Tom Cruise is in, but I hate that he's a good actor, and I actually like watching him on the screen. I hate that because, like, I don't know, just, you know, the Scientology shit and whatnot. Yeah, he's like a
word. You know what you mean? He is a he does good in every role.
He does, man. He's he's like acting wise, he's a totally good actor.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's like with some musicians when they do bad shit, and then but you still like the music, and you're like, well, whatever.
Fuck it. Oh my gosh, that's so many artists I know. Mm-hmm.
So did you, and you probably did know this, that the Tyrell Corporation is actually called the Rosen Corporation? Not, I don't even think it's Rosen Corporation, but Tyrell and is actually called Rosen in the book.
Oh, I actually never knew that. In the movie, it's Tyrell, right?
Yeah, and Rachel's last name is Rachel Rosen.
I know that, yeah, I know the phrase "more human than human," he says, and that led to the Rob Zombie. Oh, White Zombie.
So I think is that Rob? I don't know. You're right. That is White Zombie.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, White. I was like, I had to think about it. I was like, no, it was White Zombie before he went solo.
Yeah. So that song, dude, like when I was 13, that was like one of my favorite songs ever. And I love that song. And when I heard him say it in the movie the first time, I was like, that's probably where it fucking came from. And then I was right. That is huge.
Film buff. Like, he loves
science. Yeah. Well, he is a director, after all.
That is true. It's true. And, like, the horror movies he likes, he actually is much more of a fan of, like, 1930s Universal monster movies than modern. Yeah.
So I'm happy you went to the 30s quickly. Have you ever seen Metropolis?
Oh, I have seen Metropolis.
You have? Playing?
Absolutely. I loved Metropolis when I watched it.
I have never seen Metropolis, but I have obviously seen like clips and stuff like that. And I know it's a big comparison, you know, Blade Runner, like Metropolis. Oh, yeah, obviously inspired.
It's very influenced by Metropolis and how it looks. But it's just really cool with Blade Runner to see it. Like Metropolis looks amazing for being made in the 1920s.
Yeah, yeah, it was like 25 or something.
Yeah, it's like really old. Like, it was, yeah, and it looks like the 1920s Metropolis looks incredible. But and like
that movie also isn't. It's not like black and white, right? It's like monochrome or something.
Yeah, it's like kind of what the movie is in the beginning. It's like that weird color.
Yeah, and
too.
Oh, interesting. So we're gonna try to wrap it up here, right?
Yeah. So I just kind of wanted to finish off with this quote Ridley Scott said about the whole idea of Deckard being human and not being human. And this was around when 2049 came out. So this is quite the quote with Ridley Scott. If when you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is how it starts. Oh, it was always.
Wait. I'm sorry. If we're gonna wrap it up with this one, there's two things I want to say quickly. We do not have to rebuttal upon them. One,
okay.
Rick Deckard is a fucking alcoholic. That man reaches for a drink any chance he gets.
It's true, and he does drink way too much, and he drinks a lot.
He does. There's bottles everywhere. And he is like, when the police officer in the beginning offers him a drink, he just like jumps on it. I love that scene. The second,
Eddie Valiant from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I need to watch that again. I watched it when I was a kid, but I haven't seen it again. That's probably like my next watch, actually. Another thing, very minor. They still rub chopsticks together in the future. And I don't know if that's like if that was scripted or anything, or Harrison Ford just did that. But when he's eating sushi or noodles in the beginning, he rubs his chopsticks. And this movie feeling so futuristic, I felt like that was one of the relatable things about it. And I don't know, it was like such a small detail. I just thought it was, I don't know, so it much.
Like Tarantino does that a lot too. He always includes the small moments that always get ignored in movies, and then when you look at them, you're like, oh wow. Yeah.
It's like small subconscious things that make you feel more comfortable, almost.
And it's like, hey, give me that thing in the gas station. And then the person comes out. They don't have
edition, a free version, but I can give you the regular.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's such a smart thing to do in movies. And the last thing before we go into the quote, in terms of comedy, this movie is dull. You can't even sit around and kind of joke at it. But the one scene where Pris runs into the fucking van, and apparently that was genuine, and she still has the scar for it. I always burst out fucking laughing at that because it's so out of nowhere. And it's like the dumbest thing. And when you think of her as an android, you're like, yeah, she would totally do that. But yeah, apparently it was real and she has the scar from it. And you can see it. What's that?
Her name's Daryl Hannah. She's also in Kill Bill.
Yeah. Who does she play in Kill Bill?
Patch.
Sorry, I said no way. That's her?
Yeah, that's her.
Whoa, that's fucking cool. I didn't know that. Yeah. Wow. They look quite different. Well, she's pretty done up.
She's like super. I think she's like 20 in this movie. Not even, yeah, maybe.
She must be, because that's a pretty big gap in movies. It's like, that's at least 20 years.
Rachel Sean Young was really young when they made the movie, too. She was like 21, 22.
What else does she play in? Like,
she's not. She's an Ace Ventura Pet Detective.
Cool.
Her in.
Yeah.
Einhorn, or Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel.
Oh, weird. That's a lot of these characters in these movies, like Tyrell being in The Shining as Lloyd. Yeah. There's a lot of actors in this movie who are just in like small parts, but you know, they're very memorable actors. That's why I like that a lot.
Like these small roles, like, make small roles seem bigger than they are, you know?
Yeah, totally. But yeah, apparently she got a scar from hitting the car, and there's a movie she didn't, I think it's, I don't know if it's called 2007 something something, but, or if it was made in 2007, but you can see the scar, the genuine scar on her from the movie too, so.
Okay, I'm going to have to look up. Yeah. Well, I'm going to close out with the quote, and then we'll kind of just do our final thoughts.
Please do.
Okay. And this is really Scott talking about the idea of Deckard being corrupt. He said, oh, it was always my thesis theory. There's one or two people who were relevant here, who were relevant. I can't remember if Hampton agreed with me or not. But I remember someone had said, isn't it corny? I said, I'll be the best fucking judge of that. I'm the director, okay? And that, you know, by then I'm 44. So I'm no fucking chicken. Very experienced director from commercial, The Duelist and Alien. So I'm able to, you know, answer that with confidence. You know, back off, it's going to be Harrison. He was never, I don't remember, actually. I think Harrison was going, I don't know about that. I said, but you have to be, because Gaff, who leaves a trail of origami, gives you a little piece of origami at the end to say, I've been here, I left her alive, and I can't resist letting you know what's in your private thoughts when you get drunk. He's a fucking unicorn. So what should follow that is, duh.
Wow.
What you expected,
honestly, you kind of cut out a little bit on the last bit, but Scott's got an ego, eh? I guess you gotta kind of have an ego to do that.
Yeah, that's crazy. Still makes me like the huge.
Yeah, that's, you know what, that's what I mean. I guess it is a bit egotistical, but fuck it, I'm right with him on that. Fuck it, man. He's the director, dude. He's I get that. I might disagree personally, but yeah. What was the last part of that quote? Can you restate that?
I love Beavis and Butthead, so what should follow that is duh. So now it'll be revealed in the sequel one way or the other. I love Beavis and Butthead.
Wow. I mean, who doesn't, honestly?
I agree.
I tried rewatching Beavis and Butthead, though, and it was funny, but it's like, you gotta be in a mood, man. Oh. It's so lowbrow. It's like the hells of lowbrow comedy.
I remember the movie, like, was so, like,
There was a YouTube, I don't know if it was a YouTube poop, but it was a YouTube video where someone, I think, remixed the scene where they're on the airplane and she's like, I'm planning on hitting the sluts. And it sounds like she's saying sluts. And as a kid, I would watch that over and over and over again.
YouTube poop, the good old days of YouTube.
You know what, Jacob? That would be a good podcast idea as well. Jacob's old and new YouTube reviews.
Evolution of dance, here I come.
Oh, oh my God. Get your
chocolate rain.
Chocolate rain. Get your fucking...
It's like 12 or 13 years old now.
Dude, I want a full body boxy pillow. Mm-hmm. Hey, here's a... I know we're ending and wrapping up. This is nothing to Blade Runner. An old YouTuber, she did video game reviews. Have you ever heard of Ultra Neko?
No, I haven't.
Man, she just disappeared. I tried looking for her shit the other day, and there's a guy who's like kind of re-uploading her videos.
She disactivated her
channel. What's that?
Her channel too.
Yeah, her channel's gone, everything, and apparently like I can't find anything about her online, and I'm like, what the fuck? The only thing that I could there's a YouTuber named Storm Dane who's like one of my favorite YouTubers. By the way, if you're watching this, go watch Storm Dane. He's fucking amazing. I really want to be friends with him. I've been watching his videos for years and years, and he's so underrated, and he's way ahead of his time. But he used to be good friends with Ultra Neko, and I'm wondering, Dane, I'm going to send you this link. If you could tell me what happened to her, man, because shit, she was a cool YouTuber back in the day. What's that? Sorry?
Let's do this now so we can find out where this chick is.
Yes, please. That's the new point of this podcast. It's fine. We're finding people now. We have like a dogs. Missing person. Please contact Jacob.
I mean, awkward for people just wanting to hear us talk about movies. Now you're involved in a missing persons report.
Yeah. Oh my God. CSI.
What? Anyways, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, man, it was really fun, and I'm glad I got to say what I said. And you're great to talk movies with, my man.
Thank you. And if you want to look at any social media I have before we close out, I'll let you know.
Dude, I get a plug? Oh my God, this is like hot ones.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. If follow my Twitter, my name is Donkle. I think it's like at no love deep web with two B's. Yes, it was very unoriginal. I fucking stole that and I'm a weeb, whatever. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's z_y.o.u. And I don't post pictures, but I post stories and my life's just semi interesting. So follow that. And you can't.
That's a great autobiography title. I'm semi interesting.
So that is a good, actually, that's very good. I don't even have a bio, man. I'm not good on social media. I don't really. And you can't have my Facebook because I don't want you writing things on my wall that my mom can see. Actually, she would probably just laugh, honestly.
Social media is I call them like the image social media is not the personal social media.
100%, dude. If people just went off about my social media, I don't know. I probably just seem like a normal guy. I'm probably just a normal guy anyways. So fuck it. Anyways, Jacob.
It was great. Thank you very much.
It is. It's like 2 a.m. your time, isn't it?
Yeah, again, I'm a late. I'm always, I usually go to bed like 3 in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. You're becoming a sleepy boy, man. You know what? I work nights too, so I totally get it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like, tomorrow I got going at 4. So.
Oh, well. Hey, I got to go in tomorrow, too. So, you know, at 4 as well. So, we're in it together, man.
We really are. Well, have a good night. Thanks to everyone for listening. Signing off.
Peace.